Previously on 24.
We need to pick him off to try and save the president. I'll make a run for the lockdown room. There are 5 canisters of CH4. All we need is 1 straight bullet.
Suicide plan, Jack.
We don't have a choice.
Don't you move!
We have the president!
The president is secure!
I'm so sorry, Jack. You know that he was your friend.
It was supposed to be me.
Julian and his men were not working alone.
And right now, the only lead we've got is Ryan Burnett. He knew about the attack on the White House, and chances are he's going to know who Juma was talking to.
I'm thinking about bringing Olivia on as a special advisor.
Nobody's forgotten what you did during the campaign. Leaking damaging personal information about your opponent to the press.
She's changed.
It's not the past that concerns me. Do you think any of this would have happened if my mother had a chief advisor who knew what the hell was going on in her administration?
I just got off the phone with Ethan Kanan. He's ordering me to let Bauer interrogate Burnett.
Look, I didn't want to go behind your back, but you didn't leave me any choice.
I want you to clean out your office and hand in your badge. I'm suspending you.
Jack Bauer's on his way to Kennedy Memorial Hospital.
Burnett will tell him everything.
I've already sent somebody to the hospital to deal with Burnett. He can take care of Bauer at the same time.
You lay one finger on him, it's over.
Right.
Juma's attack failed. He's dead, so are his men.
Somebody get me the hell out of here!
You're not going anywhere.
What happened? What's going on?
Priority ATV issue for Jack Bauer.
Larry, Jack, listen to me. I'm being set up. Don't let him get away with this. This threat is not over.
The following takes place between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m.
Hi, this is Evan Katz, executive producer and co-writer of this episode. Thank you for listening to this commentary. We're here with Bob Gunton, who plays Ethan Kanan, Carlos Cotto, who the other writer on this episode, and the lovely Annie Wershing, who plays Renee Walker. So we're going to be walking you through this. Carlos, say something clever.
Jack's indestructible elbow, I think, is at work here. Always love it when Jack is able to get in a car with his elbow. I know I can't do that.
This is the 1,000th car Jack Bauer has stolen in the course of the series. We always talk about the fact that the truth is modern cars are, you can't just hotwire them. Mm-hmm. So we try to actually have him, when we can, do older cars. But sometimes we don't.
Is that true? You can't hotwire
them? Yeah, it's not. It's not so easy. It's all computerized.
And now no one can tell me where she is.
Mr. O'Brien, the White House has been attacked. We're in the midst of an urgent protocol.
Exactly. That's why I'd like to know.
It was very nice to see, Morris again.
Yeah.
He and Chloe were very heavy in the last season. We sort of felt like we had, you know, explored the relationship almost too much without developing it. So this year, we brought him in later, and at a point where Chloe is in trouble.
Well, I think the good thing was we brought him in, and he was in the fray right away. You know, we didn't bring him in early and just have him be sort of a Greek chorus character. We brought him in at a crisis moment, which is, I think, what the show does so well, you know.
Walker. Go ahead, I'm listening. So not listening.
How? Bauer was interrogating when it happened, and we're responsible.
You're saying that Bauer. This is the section of the show where we always try to, as artfully as possible, reorient the viewer in each scene with each set of characters in each story, sort of fill each other in on what just happened.
This is what Howard Gordon lovingly calls context.
Yeah, so we always try to have somebody who doesn't know what's going on. In that case, it's Janice, so that it's organic for her to get it explained.
I always love the artfully reproduced boxes that are aesthetically pleasing as well as informational.
I cannot discuss this with you. Janice, this was my case. Tell me if Jack had anything.
And Renee is in a tight spot here.
Renee is dead.
Come on, Janice.
Well, tell me what happened. Bauer was there, and now he's missing.
Janice, the channel's open.
Thank you. That's all I know, honestly. So please, let me get back to work, okay?
Jeannie Garofalo was very, very good at...
Test Jack Bauer's profile for the
non-comedic things. It was a very nice thing to discover about her.
Now this, I marvel again at the skills of Jack Bauer, who is driving a car, uploading a JPEG into an email, and sending it with one hand.
He's Jack Bauer.
Right?
Jack
it's Bauer. Awesome. It's awesome. Because, you know, Bauer. I text and I nearly rear-end people on the freeway, so, you know, he's...
Now this DVD will be used as evidence against you, Carlos.
Don't get me involved, man.
Renee, it's Jack. Don't hang up the phone, please.
Whatever they told you. Now, this is what I always marvel, Annie, at what you guys do, which is the exchange of information. A lot of information. This particular scene, Evan, I think was written how many different times and how many
times.
Different ways.
This was not a pleasant scene to write.
It's a big, I mean, you talk about reorienting. This is a massive reorienting of the story because he's filling you in, getting you on board, trying to convince you. So you have that. And I always marvel at how you guys make it emotional.
It's interesting because a lot of times you do the phone scenes with our off-camera reader. But I remember Kiefer actually came in for this phone call.
Oh, wow.
Because it was a bigger...
He's a very good sport, very professional in that way.
Absolutely. You don't agree with some of the things I
did today. We always have points in our season where the story radically shifts. Different set of villains we just discovered, and kind of things take a turn. This is one of those. Jack's discovered, you know, an additional layer of the conspiracy. And he's dragging poor Agent Walker in.
Poor thing. This is Sebastian. I actually worked with him before on General Hospital.
He's mean.
He's very mean. He's always mean.
He held the hospital hostage, as I recall, for an entire month.
He did?
Yes. So my wife is a loyal viewer.
Oh, she?
Oh, I know all about General Hospital.
Now, Sebastian in real life really is a kickboxer?
Something like that, yeah.
Former commando.
Yeah. And an advocate of child soldiers as well, which was...
advocate for child soldiers.
Yeah, yeah. And he was... He did a documentary on the redemption thing, which was cool. Yes, sir.
If Bauer connects us to Juma, I could seriously impede this operation.
I always think about, what if this was created during the rotary dial analog era?
Well, you know, there's actually a YouTube parody that you can find on the internet, which is Jack Bauer in 1994, and it's Jack Bauer. He gets paged. He has to run to a payphone, and then he's calling her, and she's trying to send him a file on AOL. You know, and the phone's ringing, and you hear the modem, and it's like, and they print stuff out, and it takes forever because it's a dot matrix printer. It's pretty good.
One single soul. The loss of one soul is tragic to me, let alone the numbers we're talking about. But do not forget.
It's a Fox show, so I'll plug it, but somebody just sent me a copy of The Simpsons 24 parody. 24 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
John Voight doing his usual fantastic job. Yeah. John always plays with the script a little bit, tosses in some things, and enables us to select little ads he does. I'm not sure if there's one here.
I think Now We're Having Fun. Is this Now We're Having Fun?
No, that's. I thought it was. That's 12. That's the White House invasion. I think.
Those of us who come from theater, of which you have many in the cast this year, find it very difficult to edit a script that we get. The word is...
Add or change or anything?
Good.
Good.
It's part of theater training that the playwright... The writer's word is sacrosanct unless something really, really clunks, which has not happened very often.
When it does, it's, I think, on our part, a case of rushing or, you know, this is a very time-intensive show. I think every script's got to go through 5 or 6 versions, let alone minor revisions.
Yeah.
Well, as the actor, one of the actors, I get the feeling that you guys actually say these words rather than simply write them, and that's, I don't know whether that's the case or not, but...
I've had a tongue twister, too, where I was like, did they say this out loud?
No, there's definitely, particularly the expository stuff.
Yeah.
We try to do a read-through amongst ourselves right before production, and we catch a lot of stuff at the last minute.
There was... Sorry, go ahead. No, there was one thing. It was dark gray Jeep Grand Cherokee. Try to say that. Try to
dark
say it.
Dark gray Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Oh, whatever.
That's hard. That
dark gray Jeep Grand Cherokee. I mean, yeah, we exactly. went around for a week, everybody, making everybody say it like 10 times in a row fast.
Sounds like I need to spend more time on the set. Sounds like a lot more fun than the writer's room. This was another scene that went through.
I just have a few more forms to fill out, then I'm taking off.
You hear what happened at the hospital?
But again, it's what I'm saying. He's imparting information to her, but it's also an emotional scene, which is what I always find you guys handle so well, you know?
And you know, from an acting point of view, the scenes that are expository but do have a strong emotion animating them are much easier to remember.
Much easier, yeah.
And, as well as to play.
The expository scenes for us, I think, are the least rewarding to write.
Right.
You know, they don't necessarily flow out of the computer or into the computer. This is he's 24. What does he know? What do I know? What am I thinking? What am I hiding?
I like the little pet of the computer. Like, oh, I was just oh. That was Jack.
I don't know in other commentary if it's their relationship has been discussed. And what exactly their relationship was. The writers were...
Larry and Renee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uncharacteristically subtle about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just never... We never wanted to hit it right on the head.
There was some heat there, though.
Clearly something happened.
It's clearly some history.
But you were... You know, I think we felt like the more specific we were about it, the more we'd put ourselves in a box. Mm-hmm. And almost the more cliche it would be.
Mm-hmm. I liked that it was sort of... Just out there for people to... Although episode 18, it's addressed a little bit more. Yeah. I was like, oh.
Yeah. I shouldn't be the one to call his wife.
Yeah. Ex-wife.
But I mean, that's all you get.
Yeah.
It's like fill in the blanks. It's good.
I have thought about the speech.
Now, I have to say in casting, when I walked in and met Sprague, I thought, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
The cloning... Of a younger, very pert version of the strength of Cherry Jones' character.
We always thought about, at least I did, you know, all about Eve with her.
Yes, exactly. You
know, the devious. But we always told ourselves that she was really, she was telling herself that she was doing this for her mother.
Yeah, good intentions.
Sort of.
This is, of course, a scene about rewriting, which was probably not that hard to write. It's her coming. I'm going to rewrite you, Mom.
And here comes Mr. Gunton, and this is a particularly strong episode for you.
Yeah.
May I speak with you alone?
You may speak with
me. It's coming to a head now.
Hmm.
Now, do you remember this particularly well, since this is your momentary curtain?
Yes, I do. And I didn't know how... long the curtain would descend or whether it would stay.
And neither do we.
And neither do we.
Now, this is, again, a scene, right, where you have to... You're filling her in, but you're also...
Yes, keeping the ball in the air is... part of keeping the ball in the air is his past relationship with the daughter, with Olivia, and treading the narrow line between... his job, his responsibility as chief of staff, and his loyalty, personal loyalty to the president. He serves at her pleasure. Obviously, she has been rocked by the events of the hours before, and there's something in her judgment that may be a little awry, and how you negotiate through that appropriately and strongly was a very interesting problem, both for me and for the character.
To provide you with deniability in case anything went wrong.
Well, and this, I think, is what, you know, your character sort of made a choice to go out on a limb with Bauer, and it backfired, so now you're having to...
You know, I was the one stuck with doing this scene many times. This was a bear. There's a ton of information and attitude.
But I think what's great about it is you saved Burnett is dead to the last possible moment in the scene. You know, you sort of built to that. And you knew he was carrying that.
when he came in.
Right.
And it just worked really well.
And it's also usually difficult when there's, I mean, it sounds very basic, but when there's three people to service in a scene, it can sometimes be very difficult to not make it a train wreck.
But the stakes are so high for all three. That's what to me, what keeps the scene rolling is at any point, any one of the three could explode with the knowledge that they possess that the other two don't.
Don't you lie to me. We traced two calls from your cell to a phone that was reported stolen.
Busted. And we know you
not cool.
I think originally I wanted to get you guys right to a door with light outside.
Oh.
But we didn't have that.
Yeah, elevators.
Yeah.
I still don't believe that he did this.
Explain to me why he's not turning himself in and letting us help him find this mysterious third party.
Because he was framed and he doesn't trust our ability to work through it. And you know, after what we've put him through, how...
Still got the Band-Aid on the neck.
That was all season, of course, right? Wow.
How long did that last?
From five on.
It never left?
Never left.
How much time did that take every morning? You had to do a little, be like 5 minutes earlier just to do that whole
thing? It was on just, set, props.
Oh, okay, good.
Slack.
And it lined up perfectly with this mole right here.
So you should get that looked at.
Yeah. But you know, I would put it on someone at the end of every day that I worked. A hug goodbye, and they would walk around with it for hours. But
did the crew compete for the honor?
Uh huh. John Cassar saved the last one.
Oh,
he's gonna sell it.
I don't. You know what? I don't want to know what he did with it.
This was interesting, I think, because the permutations that we went through on this episode, story-wise, remember we where Jack was going to go.
Oh,
it wasn't,
God.
It wasn't evident that he was going to go to Mayor at first. You know, we went through a bunch of different versions. And then it was sort of the light bulb went off, and it was like he should go back to the guy who was grilling him at the beginning of the season. And that's really, I think, where, for Jack's story, the episode kind of came to life because it gave him a purpose.
It was very exciting to see this. I haven't even seen this part.
He's a wonderful actor.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to believe he's, you know, done more comedy work.
Right.
You know, really, than dramatic work that I know of, anyway.
I'm always partial to his work in RoboCop, myself. He was great in RoboCop.
Yeah.
Hello?
Keep your hands where I can see them, Senator.
These were another batch of scenes loaded with exposition, and as the plot, we wrenched the plot in another direction to this unknown forces that Jack's trying to isolate through the picture of Sebastian.
Well, and this also brought in a bunch of backstory, because there's this whole backstory that is in these files in Mayer's investigation that has to kind of get elucidated during these scenes as well.
Right.
In addition to the fact, and I think this is what made it work, in addition to the fact that I'm sitting across the table from the guy who was trying to bury me at the beginning of the season, which is, I think, you know.
Murder of federal witness in cold blood. I didn't kill Burnett. This man did. Do you know who he is?
He's on General Hospital.
Yeah, he's Jerry Jax.
He's Jax's evil brother.
This episode, well, the end of this particular storyline has one of our, I think, great gasps. You know, yes. The doorway?
Yes.
But you'll have to spin a better story than that if you expect it to get you off the hook. Senator, I did not come here to clear my name. I'm trying to understand the connection between Juma and Starkwood. There isn't one. I spent the better part of 6 months investigating Starkwood. If there was a connection to Juma or Sangala...
You're talking about word burgers earlier. This season had Duma, Mutombo, Dubaku, Juma.
Juma.
And I had several speeches where I had to say all three of those.
Oh, gosh.
And I, you know, Chewbacca.
Solo. Chewbacca, Solo.
Never again.
Vader.
Juma, Dubaku, Mutombo.
This was also the season with Galvez, Gadsden.
Yes.
A lot of G's.
At one point we had Jack, Janice, Juma. There was all these J's. For any amount of money.
Maybe they have different reasons for helping Juma.
Yeah, see, whenever we kill the villain of the moment, which we killed Juma in the prior episode, gotta have a villain.
The ship has to right itself or turn, I guess you would say.
And we sort of interlace this by starting to introduce John Voight as of episode
11?
11 or 12. Mm-hmm. I know Juma calls him from the White House in 12, and that's the first, I think, on-screen linkage of them.
Well, and I think what's great here is Mayer, you know, Kurtwood provides sort of the interim villain, because he is kind of an interim villain here. He's an opposing force to Jack, even though he's ultimately going to come to his side. He gives us that thing that Jack can butt up against for an episode or two until Voight and his guys make themselves known in the form of Jerry Jacks.
One of the great subtexts of 24 and this year certainly is watching Jack handle the priority of allegiances, mostly to his own conscience, and
right.
but to various people at various times.
I think we use the Screen Actors Guild as inspiration for that. I'm just kidding.
Now, I seem to remember that Carlos, this episode for me revealed Carlos's eerie ability to write political speeches. Seriously, I was like, wow, you should do this for a living.
Yeah, I wrote this speech and she called from the set and thanked us. And
you know, you're eerily good at this.
Blessings on this place. Tonight, those blessings
it's that good. The people who turn on this commentary track, they don't want to hear us.
That's right. They want to hear the president.
Terry Jones is so good.
Yeah. But to me, what's really cool about this, like 24, is something else is going on. It's pretty huge. The speech is sort of background.
And, right. And Bob, you guys had worked together before, right?
Yes, we'd done a movie called Mission of the Shark. About the
Sharks.
USS Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah.
And Perfect Storm, right?
I guess he was in Perfect Storm. We didn't work together then.
Tim was in Perfect Storm?
No, you and Cherry.
No. Oh, you and Cherry.
Oh, Cherry.
Cherry. Yeah. Other yes. Guy
yes. When I came on set, I had been the captain of this yacht in Perfect Storm, and she had been, practically speaking, my first mate. So when I came on set, we had not seen each other since. And I said, well, you're captain of the ship now.
That's great. What did she say?
She saluted, and but we have a relationship that was forged in that experience, and it was so helpful to have that. I hope it reads on screen or has read.
It very much does. Here's this is going. This is where you nail her.
Yeah, this is great.
You leaked the story of Burnett's murder and my involvement to the press.
Ethan, I don't.
And neither does the audience yet.
We'll straighten that out.
They're not sure if she did it.
Yeah.
Your mother denying it. I can count on one hand the number of people who knew I'd authorized Bauer's release.
So another one of your errors in judgment bites you on the ass. And you think you can lay the blame on me?
Do you realize what you've done in trying to hurt me? You'll have caused tremendous damage to your mother.
To have that going on in the foreground,
right.
While that heroic speech in the background is, that's entertainment.
And dude, you really know how to do the whisper, the dramatic whisper, man. It's awesome.
Well, I mean, all of us are acolytes to Kiefer.
I don't know. I think Carlos Bernard has got a
yes,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn up the mics.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, right now, Ethan's the only one who has her number.
Well, the unflappable Ethan Kanan is flapping
it together.
In the breeze.
Named after a novelist, I guess.
No, there's been no sign. All of those scenes with Olivia had special psychological depth for me because that's the name of my only daughter.
Oh, really? That's my daughter's name, too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that how the character got her name?
Yeah, my brother named her, and it's his niece, so... Mm.
One of my sons is named Olivia as well. The blonde.
Like who?
Kelly O'Brien, but from what
and word burgers, Janine gets all the technical words, which you're the best at that stuff.
But she gets to put them on her computer screen.
Right. But Evan knows how to write those without making them burgers. That's we always go to Evan for that stuff.
I'm the master of the BS.
Right. There's some good ones.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to call you back.
Oh, this was fun.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you've got two characters negotiating is always fun.
And that's what I was saying before. Any other show, you know, the character would have shown up and say, "Hey, how you doing? And welcome back to the story." Or and we put him in this crucible. You know, it's like your wife's in holding, and
it must be an interesting marriage between Chloe and Morris as to who's more petulant. It's like the petulant patrol.
Until he snapped and murdered a federal witness. Really? I find that hard to believe. All that's relevant here is that your wife is going to be prosecuted for colluding with Bauer unless you help us find him.
Mr. O'Brien, a short time ago, one of our agents was in touch with Jack Bauer. She sent a name and address that we assume is his next destination.
Here comes the Evan-ness right here, man.
Oh, yeah.
Decrypt the... This is a pure Evanosity right here.
Therefore...
It's good to have a skill that's useful in the real world.
Jack Bauer and my wife have a very long history. I consider
you instantly like Morris too, because he's defending Jack.
The case against your wife is rock solid. I can't. We're talking about her serving a minimum sentence of 15 years. Your son will be 19 by the time she gets out of prison.
But it will cut down on family arguments.
He makes that look work, too, I gotta say. I always expect him to have an earring and a parrot on his shoulder, you know, when he turns. He's got that pirate look going, but he makes it work.
It is nice when you can take time with reactions and thought processes.
32.
Ah, here we go.
Here we go, dude. Let's enjoy.
The designer of this algorithm built a back door into his code. Decryption's a piece of cake if you know the override codes.
And you do?
Yeah.
Will this take long?
Of course not.
Mr. O'Brien, can you tell me specifically when you'll have the file decrypted?
Yes.
But I'm not going to.
Now. Your agent sent Jack... 951 Deerbrook Avenue, Georgetown.
I did no such thing.
It's almost my address. That's a little shout out to my neighborhood. Deerbrook is one of the main streets in my neighborhood.
It's always good when the storylines start to converge on Jack, in this case.
Reaching Mayor on his cell.
I've got my action windbreaker. You know something's up whenever they put the windbreaker on, right? I'm sorry, what agency are you with? I didn't notice the 10-foot letters on you. Oh, they're not that big. I thought they were bigger.
I always thought it was interesting levels-wise that Larry kind of wants Jack to be guilty because of Renee. I always thought. He has more training
and more experience. That's what I loved about his... Well, at this point, it's okay to talk about all episodes, right? I always thought that Larry kind of had the Chappelle track, where he's the one that you don't want to like in the beginning because he's against Jack, and then you're just like he has that sort of makeup scene with Jack right before episode 18, and then you're like,
well, it's kind of his journey.
You know, once you make up with Jack, it's all over.
But yeah, but there's a great scene where Jack says, "You're right," where he tells him not to go. I think that was in 18 as well. Right?
Says, and he also has a sort of Larry and I sort of had a nice sort of coming back together scene all right before.
I finally became convinced when Jack came to the White House earlier that, and I befriended him and even let him use my office, that I might have somewhat of a longer stay on 24 and that I perhaps was not the mole.
See, do you guys sit around and discuss it?
Absolutely.
Really?
And we discuss.
Is it open or do you...
I mean, it's mostly joking, but very often Annie, the script supervisor, would look up through the first three or four episodes and said, You're the mole.
So this is kind of interesting, as you see Chloe and Morris torn loyalties over Jack and their marriage. Renee's torn loyalties between Larry and the FBI and Jack. It's a common theme for us, but it's a particularly strong thematic link in this episode. And I think also in the Kanan story.
Yes.
Loyalty. My wife was, you know, Kanan knows he's getting screwed, but...
Well, and here's the poster boy for torn loyalties right here. You know, a guy who's done all this stuff for, quote-unquote, his country, and, you know, got put on a spit by this guy. And this is what the whole scene's about. It's like, do I have regrets? Yeah. But the world's what the world is, and I got to be Jack.
It's almost like you guys planned it.
Yeah.
Being Jack means...
Almost.
Being Jack seems to mean having the strongest compass, internal compass, about what eventually, what decision has to be made, whether it's shooting a bullet past Renee's neck and having her trust him that she's going to make it through this, the earlier episode.
What you've lost, Mr. This was a scene that went through many, many iterations, and that Kiefer really contributed heavily to, really wanted to get in there and put his mark on it. You know, he felt very strongly about the issues. I mean, this is very issue-laden, you know, the law.
And the character, yeah, the law. Carrying this guy around for 6-7 years.
And this is the theme of the season, ultimately. You know, what do you do? How far do you go? What place does the law have with someone whose job it is to do whatever's necessary?
Tell me about this, Clarks. Yeah, it's definitely my struggle.
Right, it's absolutely. It's really, in many ways, and we've said this quite explicitly in the writer's room, it's really Renee's story. You know, a woman who seems, I mean, our analysis of it was frustrated before she met Jack by
the system
and the restrictions on her job, and that Jack opens this terrible door that you walk through where you cut off someone's air in the hospital and like that, and it very much becomes about the cost to you emotionally, personally, and at the very end of the year, really a real point is put on it.
It's like a moral seduction.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's expecting you two to get it on,
right.
but the seduction is on other issues.
And he's not, I mean, he doesn't want to take her to the dark side.
No, not at all.
But he also has to, his character has to learn to respect that things are your decision. It really was, you know, about you in a lot of ways. I mean, Jack's already clearly made his decision.
Right.
And it's always more dramatic when someone's in the middle of that.
Well, and somebody's on an actual journey. You know, Jack, as Howard often said too, Jack at this point has become sort of an immovable object, even though he's not really, more so than the first, second seasons. He's so immovable. He's just rock that you need someone who's on a journey, who's on an arc, working sort of against him and with him. Technology and the expertise.
And what did Juma have to offer? I would say... Annie, you've probably frowned more in this year of acting than any, all your acting.
I don't think
the entire
there's one
life.
Smile anywhere. Oh, well.
Frowned and looked stricken.
I think most of us looked stricken for most of the year. I had one scene with Kurt Wood where, for a moment, I am...
Is that fatiguing? And I mean, does that affect your emotions? Very serious question. Does being that tense and unhappy and stricken affect your state afterwards?
I think for me, it makes in between takes and afterwards. Then I'm just the exact opposite. I'm hyper and
giddy.
Goofy and the exact opposite.
And you do that on purpose to kind of shake out of it in between takes?
No, not even on purpose. It just happens from it. The release
valve.
Yeah.
And it affects the crew too. I this has been one of the happiest sets I've ever worked on. And it's because we all joke about the level of intensity at which we have to function, including the crew.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Kiefer, though, I feel like is very serious between takes. Is when I've been down there.
It totally depends on the scene. If it's a big emotional, heavy dialogue scene that, and especially a scene where the dialogue has been reworked, mm-hmm. and that's been an issue or whatever, then it's definitely a more intense, serious vibe to the set that day. If it's an action sequence or, right. you know, just easy breathe. Oh, no.
This was, Carlos, I think this was Manny's idea to have that twist.
Yeah.
That was really, I think that's one of our good ones. I hope people didn't see that coming. You know, these two men finally bridge this gap.
Mesmerized.
There were incarnations where we really extended the battle between these two men. It was supposed to be basically Jack Bauer versus evil Jack Bauer.
Right. Two guys with equal skill sets going at it.
But, you know, when you consider in the Bourne movies, it can take days or a week to shoot a hand-to-hand combat scene, and we have a night and a half. We have to find a different way to be interesting.
Well, this was a pivotal moment for my character. This could have saved everybody a lot of trouble. And it reminds me of a moment that I had in Shawshank Redemption as the warden, where if I would have granted Tim's request to find the real killer, everything would have worked out fine. In this
case, it's all your fault.
There will be a moment where she offers a card.
Right.
And had I taken it...
Right, it's a bluff.
It's a bluff, and she succeeds in the bluff only because, again, there is this question of allegiance on a personal basis to the president and the allegiance to my job, and I think Ethan fails in this moment.
I know we wrote it where she comes in holding it. I don't think that's the way they played it, that she's forethought the whole thing.
And he agreed. So as long as we get Bauer in custody, we should be able to keep the fallout contained.
Ethan, under the circumstances, I think it seems clear that you were mistaken.
Oh, Mom, happy that...
Please.
And I think the president failed.
Yes, well, of course. And Ethan's saying... Fuck! She got me.
Yeah. And it was good at establishing her cunning, though, and how good she was, because this was really her first big move in the White House, you know,
right.
Beyond rewriting the...
Now,
rewrite your mom.
It's unclear in the scene as to what he really thinks. Mm-hmm. Does he really think this happened? But I always believed he knows he's been outmaneuvered. That it's
seasoned
BS.
Seasoned political operative, as we like to say in the room.
I think unconsciously he knows he has made a cowardly choice for what may be important reasons at a difficult time. And so I think I remember thinking, I hope there is a point where I can redeem this.
I'm never loaning Jack Bauer a jacket, that's for sure.
Yeah, really.
This was a sequence. I don't remember what, Carlos, you had written, but Brad Turney came up with that crazy trailer idea.
The trailer idea was great, yeah.
That initially I was really negative about, mm-hmm. as kind of...
We all saw it. We all saw it as the Fred Astaire movie. What's the Fred Astaire movie where he dances?
Walks up the walls?
the
trailer and the bulldozer. Thing, yeah. I was a little worried it was a little too big, but...
Yeah, but it worked, and it kind of set everything up for the big fight scene.
Well, Brad also just felt very strongly he could make it work, and when a director who's done the show for a couple of years and done it consistently well, you just have to go, okay.
And,
you're right. I'm sure you're right.
Well, originally, what I had written was he just comes in and he's not there, and it's ye old, you know, he catches him from behind the door or behind the desk or something. And I think Brad wanted to really, you know, start the scene with a bang, so to speak.
And that only took several hours to squib up.
I never got to shoot a gun like that.
No, but I think he probably almost certainly gotten to shoot a gun more than any other woman on all seasons of the show.
Ooh. Yeah, you guys weren't around for any of this, right? Yeah.
No.
Pretty cool, huh?
This was good.
This was
I don't know where Brad got this from, but it was pretty cool. Yeah. I think maybe he saw the location and
that's awesome.
He gave him the idea.
Now this fight scene completes the triumvirate of Super Jack talents. You'll see it's coming up. You got the elbow and the computer work while driving.
Now there was when they do these scenes, there's a lot of on-set improv.
All right.
And they.
I love that this is just hand to hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, this went on much longer, and was cut to sort of, you get the point.
I had to use a shovel.
Yes.
The shovel was great. That was Evan. And here it comes.
Remember the glass?
Here it comes. There it goes. Screwdriver.
Kind of really never.
Screwdriver through the bulletproof vest, ladies and gentlemen. And then he hammers it in.
Oh, now, my God.
I like that.
You mentioned the Bourne Identity, that the violence, the kind of ugly violence of this reminds me of that famous fight scene.
Yeah.
In the apartment.
Yeah, that was the idea, was to really sort of have these guys go at it.
What a great sequence.
Yeah. And then you got this great Brad Turner shot with the screwdriver in the foreground and the exposition. And now he's basically telling them there's another bomb coming.
Brad is great at framing shots, but he is also superb at honing emotional moments to a real kind of core. I found him particularly helpful on the set, and particularly helpful in this episode.
You can tell, too. You can really tell that's his strength when you look at the dailies.
Yeah, he finds the gear shifts in the scenes and the moments. And
we used to have more tone meetings with the directors where we'd walk through our intentions and with someone like Brad, do it a little bit, but, so involved in the show, he just gets it.
Copy that.
And the actors as well, of course.
This was something that you talked about too, Evan, that we did in this episode. I think you went down and did where we played a scene in the boxes, which we hadn't done in a while.
Right.
Which we did more in the early. I thought that was great.
We sort of had to because it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough of a scene to be a scene, but it had to happen. And the re-entry of Tony Almeida.
Wait, I can't. I'll get back to you as soon as I'm on the road.
I can't. It's a real-time show. See, and he uses the same screwdriver to jack the car.
Oh, man.
Dude. Well, the blood makes it slip in easier. So okay.
Hopefully not to eat.
Oh.
Right?
Hopefully he doesn't use it to eat later. As my mother would say, do you know? You don't know where that screwdriver's been.
He's taking off in the truck. There's always extra sparks on our
case. Wow. Good episode, you guys.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.